Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
This new trade possibility that's starting to gain a lot of momentum. John McClain of the Houston Chronicle reports that the Texans could trade Deshaun Watson to the Miami Dolphins by the end of this week. There are 2 weeks left until the trade deadline, and right now we're starting to get a look at, okay, well, the Jets going to trade Marcus May. Are we going to see Michael Gallup get traded by the Cowboys? And now, bam, here comes the story of potentially Deshaun Watson to the Dolphins. And the other part of this is that it would be a three-team trade that could potentially see Tua Tagovailoa going to the Washington football team. So a three-team trade at some point where Tua goes to Washington and Houston sends Deshaun Watson to the Miami Dolphins in exchange for whatever they kept saying they've wanted for Deshaun Watson all along. Now, there's many different angles to this. This is a really big story. The first one is this, to talk about this part, because this is what should tell you a lot about the Miami Dolphins. They want a guy with 22 sexual assault cases hanging over his head rather than Tua Tagovailoa. That's what they want. We still want this guy. Everything going on, everything that we don't know about his future and how, when he's going to play again, if he's going to play again, nope, we still want that guy. I feel dirty. I feel coated in slime that this is actually going on and it's being met with, yeah, we're going to go trade for this guy. I mean, we have found a way to lose morals by the day in this country. And I look at this and I go, you can't wait and see how it goes and see if he's actually in good standing with the league. If he's not, no, we still want him. But what if he, no, we still want a guy. This is a really bad thing that you're okay with trading for this player, particularly when his situation has not been resolved. Now, maybe it is resolved and he's able to play. And if he's able to play, that's how it works, right? So I get that. But this is really bad. And you're talking about a team saying, yeah, we're okay going out trading for this guy. This is such a seedy side of sports that, again, I feel slimy and gross just talking about it, because that's where I'm at with this, that we want a guy with these sexual assault cases possibly going to stop his career or whatever. No, we still want this guy. That's gross.
Well, in the end, he's got a bunch of allegations, right? There's not charges, right? It's all allegations. And yes, they are numerous and they are disturbing. But at this point, if he and the Texans were getting along, he could be in the lineup right now, right? They don't always take action on every allegation. We've seen it in some respects, right? Where there's no criminal component and yet it still goes to the personal conduct policy, and I have to believe that whatever happens, eventually he does. And so the NFL, as we use the term so often with them, it's another ham-handed move to not at least have some official position on it all, but he's getting his due process in as well. So in this case, if you're the Miami Dolphins or if any other team were to emerge as a would-be suitor, in this case, you're looking at a distressed property because there's a lot of unknowns, right? It's buying the house or buying the car that you see parked along the street. You got those in your neighborhood? I don't know. I got one when I get off the freeway where there's about a block and a half where every weekend day there's like five or six cars that just have a price tag and a phone number. Right there, you have no idea if they're in any kind of shape. Kind of buyer beware. Same thing, a house. Hey, you know what? I waived all the inspections. Why? Well, I plan maybe to knock it down, but the other way. So you're buying, you know, unknown, right? It's a blind box, you know, and we do an unboxing of baseball cards or whatever else. You're taking your shot. Same thing here with Deshaun Watson. You have no idea how it's going to turn out, but maybe you've already decided, A, your team's not where you thought it was. Because remember, we were talking about the Dolphins as a team with a great roster, and all of this is built, and they're ready to win. And, well, what are they doing? They're floundering. And all of a sudden it becomes this massive indictment of Tua, whether he's the guy or just a guy, I don't know that you've seen enough. There are parts of games where he looks like he's in control, but it's not like he's getting a lot of support, and you don't really have the roster you anticipate. But I think if you were to do the ranking of players, assuming Deshaun Watson's available, well, he's still a top, what, seven player at the position? Top 10, top five, I don't know, wherever you want to put that, because, you know, you separate the player versus the man in this respect. And for the Dolphins, if they think, based on their own investigation, that he may just face a 4 or 6 game suspension from the league, maybe you're getting a guy who becomes an absolute bargain. Maybe this spurs on, you know, great things for him in his life and, you know, whatever. He becomes active in communities, whatever. Or it goes the other way. But at this point, if a team's willing to take on that risk, I don't see why they shouldn't be able to.
Legally, you can, yes. Legally, because it's obvious the NFL has not wanted to step in and have any sort of role in this, which, I mean, come on, you're the NFL. This is a really bad story. This is now, this is 22 people, and I get that it's moving slow, and I understand that you we're trying to try this in the press. I get it. This is still a player that has had 22 women accuse him of sexual misconduct. And to say, yes, not only are you eligible to be traded, but there's a team that actually wants to do it, and it doesn't matter. Really, where are we going? I mean, what does this tell you about the NFL? I mean, we always say, hey, if you can play, you can play. But wow, this is something that could have been stopped, and the emergency brake could have been thrown so many times in this. You know what? Hang on, he's going to go on the exempt list. Hang on, he's going to go here. But now there's been no talk of that. And I would hope the NFL would intervene and say, all right, if you guys are really close to a trade, we're going to tell you he's going to be on the exempt list for a while. And then see if the Dolphins still want to go forward. They still want to go forward with that? I mean, what can you do? I mean, you know, there are so many more evidence every day that we are getting morally bankrupt. And this is the sports example of it. If you want to trade for him when he is cleared, if he is cleared, I get it. I understand that part of it. I get that's how the world works. You can agree or disagree with that, but all right. But this is still in the balance. We still don't know how this is going. This is still 22 misconduct lawsuits.
But you can't also, I don't think, Jason, I don't think you can also assume that it's, you know, he's guilty and therefore everything stops.
It's got to stop until this figures end, until you figure out an end to this. It's got to stop for Trevor Bauer until they figure out an end to it. And the wheels of justice do turn slow. And that's the unfortunate part for everybody. You want a speedy trial. You want some kind of resolution. Well, all right. Well, stay out of these situations. You know, there's 99.99999% of athletes who every night don't get charges filed against them for sexual misconduct.
Absolutely.
So, you
no
know,
question.
That's where, unfortunately, hey, I'm sorry, but while this is going on, you have to sit out while this is figured out.
Yeah, in the absence of a decision, as it stands right now, you know, if you're the Dolphins and you can get Houston to come down off of what I think we can all argue, even in the best of circumstances, and there's nothing out there in the larger world of allegations, that it's still a ridiculous ask based on what's been leaked in terms of, you know, compensation for Deshaun Watson. I think reasonable folks can get to that. But certainly, you know, I understand your point. And certainly it's the case. But as we've seen, where we're at and where the NFL is, they're taking the innocent until proven guilty. And even then, it's still not criminal. So I'm just curious, like, if he was on better terms with Houston, would he be playing right now? Or would they have decided to sit him down? Or would the NFL have taken action?
Ooh, don't ask that because that would force me to make a decision. Ooh, we don't want to make a
decision. But that's the thing, right? If these guys were getting – but that's just it. We're playing the game of hypotheticals with all this because there are a number of reports that also refuted McClain's report very quickly saying, yeah, this is no closer today than it was 2 months ago.
Well, right? I will tell you one thing definitively. At this point, because now too many things have happened, if I'm Tua, I go in and say – you know what? I'm not going to play for you guys anymore. I'm not going to sit here and have you throw me out there for trade. Tell me you love me. Tell me you're a guy. But still, it's obvious you want to get rid of me. So you know what? trade me. Sit me until that, because I don't want to get hurt. I want to be able to go to my next team and play quarterback, right? I want to start for Washington in a couple of weeks. So you know what? You start somebody else, you trade me and move on. Because to do this to a guy who hasn't even really had his chance to prove what he's done and who has done everything right, there's been no reports of, hey, Tua's doing this wrong, he's this, you know. It's just there's a portion of that franchise that just doesn't believe in him. And okay, I get it. But if I'm Tua at this point, it's like, you know what? You can't keep disrespecting me like this as an athlete, as a person. I'm not going to play. I am not going to play until you trade me, because this is just too much to go through. And obviously my future's not here, so I'm not going out and risking getting hurt when my future is clearly someplace else. So now you go make this trade. Now you trade me. Now you want to. If you can't, I'm sorry, but I'm going to sit and you're still going to pay me, and then I'm going to go someplace else, and then I'm going to play for that team. That's the definitive part of this where I would do if I was Tua.
Now, that would be an interesting spin. Like, to where I sit, it's like you got an opportunity to show your wares for, because there are a number of teams that are still looking for quarterbacks, and maybe they're already turning their attention to the draft class of 2022. But, you know, watching Tua and when they've actually had some competent receivers out there, been some nice throws. We had some nice throws as they got through their early progressions with Jalen Waddle. I mean, they've got a nice connection going there. But it goes back to something I've been saying all along. It's the, you may like him, but Deshaun Watson, if not in legal hell, you like more, right? So that's what Miami, if they're looking at it and trying to say, all right, we really can get a game changer. We got a guy, but we can get one of the guys. And so for Tua, you know, it's you handle it as best you can, because I don't know if you're at the point where you go scorched earth, and I don't know that you show up in sweatpants and a cell phone in your pocket yet.
I'm going
sorry,
all.
I got to bring it all together, you know. So it's that kind of thing. But certainly, you know, he's got to kind of have that come to Jesus with Brian Flores and just be a professional, right? At this point, you're a grown ass man. You know, there's always going to be, while you're a quarterback and your team's not winning, there's going to be speculation about your job, fair or not.
Yeah, no, I get it. But the other part of it is that it's been so many times, it's been so unfair. And I think about, I want my future to be good, because clearly it's not here. Clearly I am not your future. So you want to do me right by this, then I'm going to sit, and then you're going to pay me, and then you're going to trade me, and I'm going to go someplace else where I can be a quarterback. Because that's a thing where I could say, and I could say, you know what? And nobody would say, you know what? I can't believe you're quitting on your team. Because if he goes out and gets hurt, what happens? What happens? So that's why I sit out now. I say, no. Now you've screwed me enough. Now you got to trade me, and I'm going to sit until you do it.
Claim you got a hamstring injury or a back injury?
You like that.
I'm just trying to figure out how you best orchestrate this so that you don't become the bad guy. I'm trying to look out for, you know, Tua's image here, because right now all he comes across is a guy who's working his ass off to come back off a horrible hip injury to kind of live up to expectations and leaving it all on the field. Is it always pretty? No. But the fact of the matter is, you also don't want to torpedo any goodwill that you've built.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Opening night, night two in the NBA is, look, before we get into the game specifically, this we talked about this really briefly last hour. This is what the NBA has that no other sport has. Opening night is a month long. Every night is opening night for a month. It's amazing. Because all other sports have big opening weeks, and we get home. You have home openers for half the baseball teams, and then a couple of days later, you have home openers for the rest of the teams. Okay, you have opening day kind of gets extended for 3 or 4 days. No, the NBA has opening night for a month. The newness of the NBA and at least two games a night that are absolute must-sees that we talk about, no other sport has that. I mean, we had two games last night. We talked about them both for the majority of the show. We got another handful of games tonight. We're going to get to things happening tonight, last night, and tomorrow's going to be the same, and then Friday, and then I mean, that's just the way it goes. The NBA opening night is a month long. I wouldn't even pump the NBA as opening night anymore. I would say opening month begins for the NBA on October 21st. Opening night begins this day. Opening night begins on the 20th. That's how I would push it because that's really what it is. The excitement level of the NBA coming back, you can't believe how big that is and how long and how much they can get out of it.
Well, it's all the shiny new toys, right? The NFL, you go four games, you're a quarter through the season. All right, almost a quarter these days. But you're already, all right, we need this next year and this next. There's no room to gestate. There's no celebration of, hey, football's back. You're 0-2. You're like, ah, this guy sucks. Get him out of town. You know this as a fan of the Jets. But the fact for the NBA, it's like, all right, it's kind of not quite exhibition season, right? We're all back. We saw Jack Nicholson back in the stands at Staples yesterday, right? He'd been gone the entirety of the pandemic, even once fans were starting to get back into things, and now he's there. So you feel that little bit of normalcy returning. But for these teams, yeah, you got new draft picks. You got guys coming over in free agency. We talked about the Lakers last night. It's a process because it's a marathon, right, of 82 games over the next 6 months. You don't have to make an evaluation, although everybody would like to. Yeah, we could point out things that are problems, right? Okay, the Warriors played zone defense and said, okay, shoot, good. Lakers missed shots. Russell Westbrook a number of times drove, got the extra attention in the lane, kicked to an open shooter. They missed. Okay, moving on. He struggled trying to figure out flow. And defensively, we can ascertain that, right? We can watch that at once and go, well, these are potentially going to be problems. But you've got 82 games to figure it out. And a lot of guys who right now are waving, saying, please get me out of my current location. I know Ben Simmons. Not only are you trying to get out of Philadelphia, you're also trying to get out of your $5 million home. I saw that real estate listing earlier today. So you got that going for you, too. But all in all, it's a celebration of young talent and all of these big moments and highlight videos and everybody getting ready to get back in on trading cards and Top Shot moments and all of those things. Daily fantasy has become the rage, and obviously legalization of gambling. You got full slates every night. Cha-ching.
Oh, you want a big Top Shot moment? Alex Heischert, give us a couple of Top Shot moments from this one game. Give us a couple.
Robinson up top. Minute remaining. Give to Rose. Finds Fournier. He's open. Fake the three. Now one from straight on. Knocks it down. Got his man in the air. And Fournier, huge in his Knicks debut. To Tatum. Corner three. That's no good off balance. Rebound Randle. 3 seconds to go. And that will do it. What an opener at the Garden. A thriller in two overtimes. Knicks 138. The Celtics 134. The Knicks are 1-0 after 58 minutes. Look, terrific basketball at the world's most famous arena.
Go New York.
I'm killing myself at it.
Go New York. Go New York. Go New York. Now, look, I'll be honest with you here, right? Now, this is not me being Knicks fan, maybe a little bit, but Evan Fournier tonight, 32 points, right? Julius Randle had a big night with 35 points, but the end of the game and how the Knicks were able to win this game. And the Celtics get a great big night offensively. You know, Jaylen Brown goes for 46. He had 25 in the first quarter. The Celtics hit about 17 threes in the final minute to send this game to overtime. It's pretty simple. And I'm not giving you rocket science here. Pundits and experts were down on the Knicks, and Vegas were down the Knicks. Why? Because they're the Knicks, right? Oh, they were a good defensive team.
41.5.
They were a good defensive team. They overachieved last year. No, they're going to suck this year. I told you the Knicks are going to be better. What did the Knicks need? More offense. What did they do in the offseason? They went out and got Evan Fournier and Kemba Walker, right? Fournier tonight was the guy. At the end of the fourth quarter, overtime, double overtime, he was the one hitting three after three after three early in the shot clock. Give me the basketball. I will take this shot. The Knicks didn't have a guy like that last year. They just didn't. So this is why they struggled last year. They got to win defensively. We got to play great. Now, did they play great defensively tonight? No. They got burned on a few plays. It should have been had three-pointers covered. But the Knicks offensively, this is opening night, 138 points. Yes, in double overtime, but, you know, look, they scored 22 points in the double overtime periods when sometimes it's 10-6, you know, the outcome in overtime. The Knicks have a lot of offense now. They added big-time shooters. And Fournier and Walker are guys that are combined for a lot of points, in addition to R.J. Barrett, who still found a way to go for 19. The Knicks are deep. the Knicks are good. Everybody's sleeping on them. It's really not. It's not that difficult to see. Hey, here's a team that added a couple of players, and here. But when the Heat add a couple of players, oh, the Heat are great. The Heat are going to win. Look at this. They made a couple of big adjustments, and they added a couple of big players. We love the Heat. Oh, but the Knicks had a couple of big players. No, I still hate the Knicks. It's just bias against the Knicks in the media from experts who say, no, I'm sick of New York, because I don't want to hear people on the radio going, go New York, go New York, go. Go New York, go New York, go. But that's it. The Knicks are going to be good. They're going to be very good, because these are the kind of nights you're going to get offensively that they couldn't give you last year. Watch out for the Knicks.
I think we're going to substitute that song with the dog barking going forward. Look, 41-31 a year ago, as we look at the top of the conference, right? The Bucks are going to be a tough out, quite obviously. Defending champions and a guy who's starting to really get more confident with jump shooting in Giannis Antetokounmpo. Look out. Someone developed, learned how to putt. Going all Happy Gilmore on you. The Sixers, I think, will still be a good team, whether Ben Simmons is there or not, but are they a great team that can get over losing one of those top-notch defenders more than anything? Playmaker and the assist totals are there, but you bring in other shooters, something he wouldn't do, and you're just fine. Brooklyn, who knows? Health, consternation over the continuing Kyrie Irving saga, and wondering with getting towards the playoff time whether James Harden still got anything left in the tank. Atlanta is a fun story. The Heat are fun. I like this Celtics team a lot, 36-36 last year, and obviously the loss to your Go New York, go New York, go Knicks tonight as a happy Spike Lee leads the chant one of the greatest suits we'll ever see. One of those
that is a great suit, man.
You know, there's that Seinfeld episode where George goes to the bathroom and he's staring at one of those pictures and trying to make out what the image is within the pattern, and then he walks out with his shirt off. It's one of those kind of moments if you were staring too long at Spike Lee. And then who knows what the Bulls are, and you look at the rest of the conference as it were. So you know, you've got a very short list of contenders. So to have categorically dismissed the Knicks just based on, well, a very long history of failure is just silly. Congratulations to the Patrick man himself, Patrick Ewing, making the All-NBA All 75th anniversary team. That's pretty cool. Can't wait to see that fully unveiled. But, yeah, the Knicks are, what, no worse than where they were a year ago, which was fourth in the conference, right? I don't see how you push them aside. If you're putting on the big board teams that can get to the finals, I don't know that they can win it still, but can get to the finals, why not them?
Go New York.
I hate myself for that analysis.
Go New York. I really,
I'm going to go throw up in my mouth.
There's such a bias against them in the media because people, I don't like New York, so I'm going to pick them to not do well. Even though everybody else that adds players, oh, they're going to be great. Look at the additions they made. Oh, but I don't know about the Knicks. Yeah, okay, you know what? Choke on that. Choke on Evan Fournier and his six threes in the fourth quarter in overtime. Choke on all of them. It's exciting.
No, it's the Evan Fournier Appreciation Society. I had teachers back in high school that were like founding members of like Emily Dickinson and other societies of these authors. So when we read their work, I did everything I could to just really have a different interpretation. They hated me. They couldn't fault my analysis. They couldn't find the flaws, because it's not like most authors leave a blueprint. This is what I really meant. And as long as the analysis was sound, they had to begrudgingly give me my A, but tell me, please don't present this to the class so as not poison their minds.
Now, elsewhere, besides the Knicks' run to the NBA title, I'm ready for Knicks-Bulls Eastern Conference Finals.
Let's go.
Hey, look, the Sixers win tonight over the Pelicans, 117-97. No Ben Simmons, obviously, and no Zion for the Pelicans. Doc Rivers said today, the Ben Simmons stuff, the saga, has been muting the fun for the Sixers. Let me just say this. Oh, my God, trade the guy. Just trade him already.
It's
all right?
Muting. It's just, muting the fun.
Just trade him already.
Was his phone
already
on mute, or was it playing his ringtones when people were blowing it?
Sorry, I was on mute on that Zoom call. Sorry. I'm here. Listen, the meeting on Friday will be at noon. Sorry, I was on mute. Just trade him. He's never going to play for the Sixers again, right? If you're fining him $1.5 million and you send him home, he's going to sit home until he's traded. So he doesn't have to hang over the team, right? Doesn't have to. He's going to sit until he's traded, and now you have to trade him. I mean, I don't understand. Philadelphia is playing the victim here. Oh, the fun is all out of it. It's your fault you're in this situation. It was untenable that he wouldn't come back. Ben Simmons is not the super-duper star you think he is, and when a guy like that says he wants out, you're not going to get a lot back. You need to move the hell on. This is all on the Sixers. You knew you had an unhappy guy. He's not Joel Embiid. He's not Giannis. You can trade Ben Simmons, especially when you lose in the playoffs because a guy that's supposed to be that good is not and just stands around and watches things happen. This is your fault. He's going to be home. Trade the guy. Get whatever you need and move on. And when you need more at the deadline, you can then go add another star at some point and do it. But Philadelphia, act like a big market team, man. Act like you know what you're doing. You're not a small market team going, well, if we trade a star and we don't get one back, we're going to be in trouble because they're never going to come by here again. No, act like a big boy franchise. Okay, stop with all that. Trade the guy. Just trade him. Just do it.
The time for posturing. I mean, you've lost all leverage in this process with other teams. But I think what you want to do is wait it out till the few teams that can convince themselves they're contenders, Knicks, and others, come calling with their offers, or obviously out of the Western Conference, more likely. Arik chimes in on Twitter, quote, same thing for each sport with Smith. Mets, Jets, Knicks, all are better. How long before he turns on his New York Knicks? By Christmas, he's bashing this squad.
No, come on, man. The Knicks are all I have right now. Knicks and Syracuse basketball. That's all I have right now, man. I don't have the Mets. I don't have the Jets. I got basketball. I got basketball, basketball, basketball. Knicks.
So great. It's almost written like it came from Frostburg right there.
Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike gets swollen dome. The Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. Hey, just do it. Make the trade already. Okay, just do it. Please just do it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is now over at Chavez Ravine. The Dodgers will be playing tomorrow to extend their season. The Braves are one game away from the World Series. Joining us now on the hotline, Fox Sports Radio, MLB Network insider extraordinaire, John Paul Morosi. JP, there's going to be a lot of reasons and a lot of questions. Why are the Dodgers in the shape they are right now? Why are they down 3-1? What have you seen? Why are they down 3-1?
Well, good evening. I think a number of different reasons. First of all, I do think that across the game, we are seeing trends of pitchers being used when they're not necessarily comfortable. Starting pitchers pitching in relief. We saw it mentioned on the TBS broadcast and alluding to Max Scherzer in his interview with Lauren Shahadi about his comfort level coming out of the bullpen. And to me, what the analytics, and this we'll see if it's true for the Red Sox and Nady Eovaldi in Game 6, but what some of the analytical models don't take into consideration is the effect that it has your next start. When you come out of the bullpen and then you have a couple days off, to me, it's a really challenging thing to have to manage. And I think that we're seeing it happen to a degree with the Red Sox. We're seeing it happen to a degree with the Dodgers. And I think offensively, Turner's in a bit of a funk. Trey Turner, that is. Justin Turner's injured. and Max Muncy's out, and Kike Hernandez isn't there anymore. I mean, there's a lot of reasons where this team is not exactly the same club they were last season. They're having Gavin Lux play in the outfield a fair amount. That was not part of the original plan. So to say that, oh, the Dodgers are down 3-1 just like they were against the Braves last year and they're going to come back, the reality is it's not the same team. The pitching is a little bit more disjointed, and the offense does not have that fulcrum. Max Muncy is the fulcrum of this team. He has been someone that when they got a little too free swinging at different times last year, Muncy gave them pace. He gave them a thorough at-bat in the middle of the lineup, and they are missing that bat right now.
JP, let's flip to the other series. I know we've got to balance both here. The Astros, suddenly the floodgates open. Goes back to a missed called three strike. You mentioned Eovaldi. I liken it to the Bartman play, though. You still got to go play baseball, make pitches, and get your at-bats, so you can't cry about it too much. There's going to be missed pitches. But certainly, as this series is going on, and both series, that's certainly something that Major League Baseball doesn't like to see crop up, but here it is again.
Well, it's part of the human element of the game, and it will be until we
robots
get automated strike zone. So perhaps we'll see that at some point, but let's also take a step back. Part of postseason baseball and why it's so unique is there are always these calls, some of which, by the way, happen frequently in the regular season, and we don't shine a light on them. But you can go all the way back to the 2005 and A.J. Pierzynski and the drop third strike that wasn't. You can go back to even as recently, by the way, for Red Sox fans, as recently as the last series when there was the fluky play in right field when Hunter Renfroe knocked the ball into the bullpen and ended up helping the Red Sox. Who would have thought that was going to happen? This is part of the game. Why we love the game is it gives us these unique, discriminate moments that we can analyze and really have fun with for years and years. And to me, that is something that as much as Red Sox fans are upset about the last game, I get it. But also, I think the Astros at one point in time have scored 15 consecutive runs in this series, 15 in a row. The Red Sox have scored, a couple runs since the first inning of game four. I mean, that's like two whole mm-hmm. games where they've basically done very little. So I am not going to blame Laz Diaz. Did he miss a call? Yeah, but the Red Sox have missed some pitches. So, I mean, I think everybody's had their own degree of culpability, and I think it really just sort of matters the prism through which you want to see things right now.
Now, lastly, JP, I know it's kind of simple, but, you know, when you look for so many different reasons, you just step back, and if I said the Red Sox are an overachieving team, and we're seeing that right now, the Braves are hotter than the Dodgers, that kind of encapsulates why we're at, you know, the leads we have in both series, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And the Braves, I think a couple things about them. They really deserve a ton of credit. Alex Anthopoulos, he made some moves to send some messages to his club to get them to believe again. And I think that was a very, very important aspect of that team season because they have not had probably what you would call, since the start of the season, aside from Freddie Freeman, their other two prominent offensive players in Acuna and Ozuna. That was part of how their team was set up, and Alex had to reformulate their entire outfield on the fly, and that's hard to do. And he's done it. He's done a very good job. The pitching has come around. And I think, too, with Houston, listen, there's controversy with that team from 2017. This is a largely different group. There's a handful of guys that are still here. And the reality is they're a really good team. They're so deep. When you got the batting champion and Yuli Gurriel batting seventh, and you got a guy in Yordan Alvarez that can cue up three Chris Sale fastballs left on left and get a home run double and single, you got a pretty talented team, and they've got a really talented team.
You can follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. That is at John Morosi, Fox Sports Radio, MLB Network, insider extraordinaire. JP, as always, buddy, thanks for your time. We'll talk to you later on this week, unless the Mets hire a manager, in which case we'll call you right back.
You call me right away. I mean, they got to hire a head of baseball ops. They got to hire a couple other people. They got to hire someone to make sure that Jacob DeGrom is healthy and ready to go next year. They got to hire a lot of people.
They got somebody to. They got to get someone to take an interview.
Wait,
JP, well, you at least have to get
right.
a call.
Yeah. So Jason Smith. I mean, can we break some news on the show? Jason Smith, are you a candidate to be the Mets' next GM?
I have been contacted, and I am in the process of setting up my interview.
There you go. All right. Well,
breaking news.
But that sounds like we got to, guys. We got to Ryan. We got to update trending again. We got to lead. We got to lead trending with that. Ryan,
well, we at least have one interested party.
We got to update trending. We got to go.
We got to update trending. Take it easy, buddy. We'll talk.
Hey, I'm a veteran of the show. I know how to talk about radio. Well, we do this.
Good man.
Oh, man. He is. You are the best, JP. I mean, really, could we do worse than me as Mets GM? I mean, really, you could do a lot worse. At least you know I care. You know, hey, look, at least you know I would care. I'd want to do well. I'd want to get the right guys out there. I'd want to make the right moves. That's me. I care. Jason Smith, Mets general manager.
Oh, boy.
And I would call into the Mike Harmon show on Fox Sports Radio every
night.
No,
absolutely. No, after I ripped the Mets, you'd be calling, hey, Jason from New York calling in. I'll take calls, and you'll come on under a pseudonym.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Seeing where we are right now in the playoffs, where both the Braves and the Astros are one win away from making it to the World Series. Look, the Astros, another big night tonight. They have 5 runs in the 6 to break open a close game. Look, the way the ALCS is, yes, there's a lot of things you can look at, but honestly, the Astros are the better team. The Red Sox have overachieved to get to this point. Not going to surprise me if it's one more game and out for Boston. They really, no one expect them to be this good this quickly to be where they are right now. Look, you're playing with house money, right? So if the Red Sox go home, they go home. But looking at the Dodgers right now, down 3-1, there's two big things I want to say about them. The first one is, again, judging everything you go through. We talked about Kershaw not having him, how bad of a situation that is, because now they're having to mix and match and go to bullpen games and have starters come out of the pen, and everybody's tired. Everybody's arm is exhausted. That's a tough thing. But just generally, the Dodgers look like they're scraping the bottom of the barrel. They look like they're on fumes. Could I have any more analogies there?
But no,
they
I like
look
that.
Like,
That's good.
They look like they're out of gas. I'll give you one more. That's kind of where they are. And maybe the Bellinger home run and Mookie Betts' big RBI was like the death cry. It was like the last bit of energy that they had, and they win that game. But clearly, they look like a team that they're looking for some kind of spark, and they just don't have it right now. They have nothing going on offensively. You can't count on your pitching. Urias, who is the only 20-game winner, has not been throwing the ball well at all. And so, yeah, the Dodgers are struggling. Now, when it comes to something a little bit different, everybody's ballots are in for MVP. And you know that I've pushed for Brandon Crawford, right? He was the guy all year long. He should be the MVP. Not Bryce Harper. It should be Brandon Crawford.
Bryce Harper.
Are we seeing right now that Max Muncy is really the MVP in the National League, considering how much the Dodgers are struggling offensively without him? I mean, for a while we thought he's just that, you know, another big cog in the middle of that lineup, right? Muncy's great, but the Dodgers have a lot of guys who can rake. The only guy not raking this year is Bellinger, but that's okay. But look at how many games they've had in the postseason where their offense just isn't there. 3 runs in the play-in game against the Cardinals. No runs the first game against the Giants. They lost 1-0 to the Giants again early in the series. They win game 5 2-1. They score 2 runs in the first game against the Braves. They score 2 runs tonight. They're not hitting the ball. And what's missing out of this lineup? The guy that's missing is Max Muncy. Everything else is moving around. You're trying to cut and paste, and Lux is playing a bit here, and Chris Taylor's playing here, and you're trying. Look, I get you're moving stuff, but he's the guy that's missing. So it's hard to say the MVP is a guy who's not playing, because you want to give the MVP to a guy who's playing, but clearly aren't we seeing that Max Muncy really is the MVP, because the Dodgers offense has been absolutely awful without him since he got hurt at the end of the regular season.
Certainly see the bat for Trey Turner, not the same juice, a guy who got it done with in terms of a batting title during the regular season. So, you know, you're not getting the production at the top of the order, falling behind, and then we can talk about the pitching stuff for days. You know, I would not be upset at all. I'm still not on your Crawford thing. I know that's your hill for the year, so I'm out on that one. But I could get on board the Max Muncy train. There's no question about that. A guy who really was such a catalyst for that offense, and everybody gets better pitches when he's in the lineup, right? So the trickle down effect that rolls through there, and you lose one of your big power brokers. One thing to step back out for the Dodgers as the lamentations and hand wringing go on, and the reminder, and we've certainly heard it on Twitter a little bit as the night's developed, like. Not many teams also have the luxury to do what they did to stay competitive and keep adding to a roster. So it's really hard to feel bad for them. And I know in Los Angeles right now, people are shaking their fists in anger at me. But the reality is, not often do you get to go to the deadline and go, hey, they're going where? Nah. Hey, Trey Turner, Max Scherzer, welcome to Los Angeles.
You're going to want to feel bad for Major League Baseball and fans, and then look up and go, oh, the Braves are in the World Series, and they're interesting. How exactly?
Freddie Freeman, buddy.
How are they interesting?
Unfortunately, there's no Ronald Acuna Jr., so it's going to be Freddie Freeman.
Your most exciting player has been out since April, which is a great testament for the Braves, right? It's a great testament for them. The Braves are a good team, and they're hot at the right time. The best teams get in, the hottest teams win it, and the Braves, who were 18 games worse than the Dodgers this year, got hot at the right time, but wow, you're going to see a World Series where it's going to be, we really miss the Dodgers, man. Ooh, we were hoping Dodgers, Astros, and now it's going to be the Braves.
No, certainly looking for the repeat. And look, it's not done. I mean, the bullpen game thing for the next three games could work. Unless it doesn't. You know, it's just insane. 36 home runs, 94 RBI, 249 for those looking for the Muncy stats along the way, and an OPS of about 900. So, yeah, it's a huge loss, but again, it's a team that's been able to go out, and we need what? You think we need one more? It's Ocean's 11. It's like we got a team that'll work, but you know what? To really make this go right, we got one more guy that we're going to need, and they've been able to go out and do that. Unfortunately, you know, you get to the playoffs, you're not playing over 162 games. It's a shorter sample size, and if the bats go cold and stay cold for a series, that's it, right? You've been relying on Cody Bellinger to come up with huge heroic hits, and he's done it a couple of times, defying the odds based on the season that he had. And you know, you've kind of gone into a space where you're not generating much offense at all, right? They had no hits until the fifth inning, and then all of a sudden it's like, all right, here they come. It's like they had no hits. They score two runs, and everybody's expecting some eight-run barrage. It just doesn't happen. It just does not happen with that kind of regularity. This isn't the 27 Yankees or insert your favorite team during the PED era, whenever you decided that ended. So you've got that flowing for you. But it's a hell of a run, what they've done over this last decade. And the beauty of it, if you're a Dodger fan, one, you're not done yet. But even if you do concede things and say, hey, we're looking ahead to 2022, you know your team's going to spend money to be competitive. Now you just need to figure out that pesky piece where you don't start going to, as we talked about with John Paul Morosi, the trend of, all right, let's go steal an inning here with a starter and get a guy who finally has secured a space. And I talk about Julio Urias specifically, and him throwing his hands up being mad at the defense after giving up three home runs is, well, that's just silly. Yeah. But the fact
that
Mookie
Betts put his hands up after the home runs going, come on, man, stop giving up home runs.
They actually said that on the radio call on AM 570 LA Sports. I want to give him credit because they went right at him. And look, Julio had a fantastic year, 20-game winner. You can argue that he should win the Cy Young Award, all of those things, right? He was huge for them in the bullpen last year. But it's a change of mentality, and he went and he attacked the every fifth day during the regular season and became, you know, alongside Walker Buehler before Max Scherzer showed up, you know, an ace and a guy you could rely on. And then all of a sudden it's like, all right, let's start putting you back here because you were effective there. Well, that's not the mentality. That's not the training regimen. That's not the prep days, all of those things. And I know you want everybody to be a Swiss Army knife and be able to go when their number's called. It's not quite so easy. There's a, you know, what did Yogi Berra say about the game and how much of it's mental? It's very much that without the comedy of the line that I'm failing to remember at the moment, you know, half mental and whatever. It you go into circumstances, and that's why guys get a role and rarely, and why it's so special when they can do something else, right? John Smoltz and Dennis Eckersley are unicorns. Being able to be as good as they were as starting pitchers and then becoming dominant closers, right? Yogi Berra, baseball is 90% mental. The other half is physical. So, I mean, there's the quote I was looking for. But it's very much that. So it's a guy that's used to working on 5 days rest. Suddenly it's, all right, go back, and now you're in a high leverage situation here. You're not starting 0-0 from scratch, whatever else. It's different. And you can say, well, he's a professional. He gets paid. He should be able to go do this. People are, you know, creatures of habit. Whatever job you have, if you normally don't start your day with a meeting at 8 o'clock and suddenly they want you there at 8 ready to give a presentation, you're probably a little pissy and probably not 100% on your game, at least to start said conversation. Same thing here, except you don't have the luxury of, you know, telling a couple of bad jokes before you get into whatever critical information you have to deliver to the group. Here it's, all right, throw a pitch and see if you're ready. And yeah, if you're not, bad things happen fast.
And there's a reason why that we talk, you can go for all the reasons for the Dodgers not playing well. And, you know, but really, like, sometimes it's simpler to explain. Yes, the pitching is the thing. There's always a reason why teams aren't winning. Yes, the pitching is the thing. The hitting's the thing. Max Muncy's really the MVP. But there's a reason why we haven't had a repeat winner of the World Series since 2000. You know, as teams change every year with free agency, it's really hard to do, especially when you now have to go through an extra round of playoffs. You know, you win, your chances of winning the World Series are great when you have to only go through, but now we got to go through an extra round. Now you got to go through a play-in game and go through that. It's a lot to go through. So what you're seeing is you're seeing a lot of teams, and you go look at the teams in the World Series that are in it. Yeah, there's a reason why every other year you are seeing the best teams in the World Series, right? Why the Yankees made it in 01 and 03, but didn't make it in 02, right? You know what? Why we saw the Dodgers win it last year, but didn't make it in 2019, but made it in 2018. It's really hard. You know, and with everything going into it, to make it through the season, to have everything go right and be healthy in the postseason, everything in life is harder. Everything in sports is harder. It's harder to win a championship now than it's ever been in every sport. In the NCAA tournament, why? You have to win more games. You have to win more games. There's more mid-majors getting into the NCAA tournament, something we get into later on in the show. And so it's harder to get in. It's harder to win when you have to win another play-in game or two to make it all the way and win the national championship, right? We watch UConn do that, but nobody else can. It's harder in football because you have to win more games. You're not going to be able to have the home field advantage like you normally have. You know, two teams that normally get to be home all the way till the end aren't going to have it, that have byes aren't going to have it. It gets harder every year to win a championship. And the fact the Dodgers' excellence has been like this over the past decade is great, and all these things go into it, but just there's a reason why every year at the end we go, yep, there's another year we didn't have somebody repeat and win the World Series. We didn't have another repeat winner in the Super Bowl. We didn't have a repeat winner in the Stanley Cup playoff. They didn't have a repeat winner here in the NBA after the era of the Golden State Warriors is gone. It's harder to win than it's ever been. And sometimes you can sum things up that way. You know, it's not bad to sum things up in a simple way, because sometimes a simple way is the easiest and it's the most accurate.
I dig that. That's the nice summary statement. I mean, look at the Braves right now, right on the cusp of going back to the World Series. Remember how dominant they were in the 90s? They haven't been back since 1999. Okay, so as much as you love your organization and you say, all right, we got everything humming now, it's hard because eventually things go back. Look at the Yankees, right? All those years, Jeter and Mariano Rivera and Bernie Williams and all those guys dominating. And then you have very small spaces in between. The team is good on a year-to-year basis, but they're not great. And so you're trying to run the gauntlet, and sometimes you just come up short. You hit a series where things don't go your way. And as we talked about, again, with Jean-Paul Morosi a little bit, and we can quibble about it, you know, I have the appreciation that there's still human error, but if you can immediately get the data to say that a guy missed a call, we correct everything else. Seems like, you know, it's time for the robot. Just design a cool-looking robot, like when Will Smith was the last man on Earth and all that stuff, right? And he was fighting those guys. Or no, two different movies. That's I Am Legend. What am I thinking of?
You're thinking of iRobot.
iRobot. See, I something or another.
There you go. There's I Am Legend, iRobot, IOU.
Yeah, I'm sure he had like 700 other IMs, whatever. But the point being just that if you can get it right, you get it right. And certainly there have been, on all teams that have participated in these postseason, at least one or two strikes they didn't get that opened the door to bad things. Now, you still have to make plays. You still have to make pitches. I referenced Bartman, right, after the great Moisy Alou play where everybody melted down. Your normally steady shortstop booted a ground ball. Mark Pryor jumped up and down like he was 5 years old. All of those things happen. And you still had an opportunity to win. Likewise here, you have to get past it and be ready for the next at bat, the next pitch, and certainly when you have at least one more game to go, the next game. And teams are not responding in that fashion. But it will be a conversation that leaks into the offseason, no question about it. But as it stands right now, we're looking at an Astros-Braves World Series. Let's go.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.